have any callers?
No. Okay, Karen, we're rolling.
Okay, so this is the June meeting for the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District. We are called to order at 6:05.
All right, thanks, Karen. We do not have any public here this evening. Chris, anybody?
Nope.
Logged into Zoom? Okay, so no public input. We do need to go into executive session, so...
I'll move that we go to executive session then.
Second that.
So that was Tim with the motion, second from Ian, and we're going to switch the tape. All right, we're coming back into open session, June 17th, Administrative Control Board meeting. We had a motion by Tim and a second by Ian to come back out of executive.
Can you guys hear us?
You may have turned it off.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, we're... go for it, Karen. I'll let you.
Okay, so does anyone have any questions on last month's minutes?
No.
Okay. Does anyone have questions on the check register?
I do have a couple.
Okay.
I have a couple.
Is Steve, you on with us?
I am. I can't hear whoever just spoke.
Okay. So we'll speak up for you.
Okay, if I go first on this then?
Yes.
Go for it. Steve, the Caterpillar lease, there was within, it looked like just 3 weeks, it looked like we paid $12,000 and then we got a refund of $12,000?
They'd originally asked us to mail the check to their headquarters back in Midwest. So the original check was sent there. They said they never got it, so I had to put a stop payment on that check, and they asked me to just reissue it to Wheeler, their retailer here in Utah. So we did that, and they cashed that check. So that's why you'll see the check, the void, and then later on in the check register, you'll see a check made out to Wheeler for the same amount.
Okay.
That was the
and that's in Peoria, Illinois, I think. Peoria?
Peoria.
Peoria. Illinois.
Is that the lease one?
Let's see. The escape repairs, what happened to the Ford Escape?
I don't know. Steve, was there an incident with the Escape or was it just maintenance?
No, I think it was more just maintenance. It hadn't been...
Okay, it just said repairs.
There were several things done to it at once. Chris, do you remember?
Oh, yeah, it was the rear windshield washer was broken on it and the battery and charging system were... not working right, so we took it into the Ford dealer. Turns out it was just the battery, and actually the rear wiper blade was shorting out and killing the battery.
Now, the Spring Creek flow meter, is that just a Mountain Regional flow meter, or is it something that's being used also by Summit?
No, just to get the spring back online. It's part of something Sam needed for the state regs.
What happened with there's a mainline break at the around a golf course that we were paying for?
What was that?
There's something called Wagner Golf, a mainline break.
Was a break on the golf
course. Oh, it's at the Canyons Golf Course.
And Brian didn't want to mess around with our guys being on the golf course or something like that. Sorry, he's not available. But so they hired this other group to go in and get that fixed.
But how did the break happen? I mean, the break was just a normal break, but it's not part of the irrigation system for the water. It's part of the delivery of the main line.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. If it was community water, it would have been just part of our distribution system over there.
That's it.
So the 2011 Escape, that's getting kind of old. Hadn't we had a conversation like we retire vehicles on a certain time period? Like, do you have an expectation for that one? Are we going to keep it much longer? Or?
Is that the silver one?
That's the silver one, yeah. To be honest, it doesn't have that many miles on it.
Okay.
So we just use it as another office vehicle. In the summer, it's used by the seasonals if the distribution guys have been in it. And the new GIS hire will use it in the summer.
Okay.
Going around to do mapping.
So like... right now, that's only like a couple $100 repair, totally justified. But if you start getting into the thousands, then you just retire.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah. We sold, as you may recall, we had 3 of those, mm-hmm. and we've gotten rid of 2 of them. This was the lowest mileage one, so we've just kept this one around to do some of those things that Chris was saying.
Okay.
Well, so it's only got 50,000 miles.
Oh, sweet. That's awesome for an 11. Okay, and then on the Lost Canyon pump rehab stuff, I saw Nickerson, Electro Power, like both of those were like 23,000. Do you have an idea what the total cost is for getting those Lost Canyon shallow pumps like retrofitted and back in the system?
That's probably the majority of it. There was another roughly $2,000 per pump or per panel. Total control and power that they did the electrical wiring and so forth on that, and those invoices just got paid today, I think.
Okay.
Should be it.
Okay. And that's, so you're anticipating that's the level?
Yeah.
Nothing
crazy.
All
new equipment, the panels are new, the pumps are new, everything's new.
Full rebuild on
full
the pump.
Full rebuild.
Sweet.
Yeah, new flow meters last year, and then the pumps and motors and panel got replaced this year.
Okay. And then we had a lease one on the backhoe last month too, right? How many backhoes are we leasing? Is that a monthly fee? I thought that was a yearly that came
in. No, you approved the purchase order, the lease agreement last time. This was in the check register, just that the check was cut during May after our board meeting.
So it's the same one.
Is that the only one we lease?
We have...
The other lease doesn't come up until the fall.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought we had a couple. I was just wondering, I guess, how many leases we have within the whole district. But it sounds like just a couple.
So we have, how many equipment leases do we have all total, Steve? Is it just the 2 or is there more?
There's 4. There's the Mini, the Skid Steer, and 2 backhoes.
Got it. Okay, cool. Because I remember we've had a few come up through time, but... Yeah. Great, that's it for me. Thank you.
I have some general questions.
Yeah.
Are we able to anticipate any expenses that are in the future? Maybe this was already been asked, but I would really like to know, and maybe you just missed it, future expenses, I mean, we can't anticipate everything. I understand that. Yeah. This is unforeseen problems. But is there anything that we can rely upon in the future? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Anything in equipment, Joel, or pay, like internal payroll type expenses?
I'm just saying anything. I'm covering all my bases.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure. I mean, one, that we have enough money, and 2, that we budget for it if we don't, and 3, I mean, do we know what is coming in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we can plan.
Yeah. So from a budget standpoint, our budget's approved every fall for the following year, and within that budget, Steve has... essentially, monthly expenses that you have planned to spend, right, Steve? So that you can track actuals against budget on a monthly basis.
But what about unforeseen problems?
Go ahead, Steve.
We build in to some of the budgets knowing that we'll probably have to, for example, repair 2 distribution pumps during the year or a pump in Lost Canyon. So we always build that into kind of expected repairs and then try to put 1 more extra just in case of an emergency to cover kind of that unexpected. And then with all the additional reserves or funds we set aside, for example, for Lost Canyon, where we put in money every month. So if we had a really large expense that we hadn't planned, we'd have the cash to cover that without really hurting our operating cash or anything like that.
Yeah, I just don't want us to be short. I'm not saying that we will be, but by the same token, I just want to make sure that we're thinking in the future. So let's say we know that there's going to be an expense in Summit Park. I'm just making this up. And whether it's $2,000 or 20,000 or 200,000 if we anticipated that. Because, like I said, I don't want to see it go their pants down.
Yeah, no, I think all the budgeting is based on, you know, a lot of historical information of kind of knowing about how much, you know, in emergency repairs that we might have in a given year. Worst case scenario, we have to go to the county council for a budget amendment, and we draw from reserves that we have built up.
So we're saying that we're covered, I mean, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a really good financial position right now.
So, Scott, you go to your department heads and say for the next year, any kind of known improvements that you're going to be doing, put a budget in for it.
Exactly.
And then they put in something that says, you know, historically 40% of this number has been used for emergency repairs.
It's that kind of approach.
From a historical standpoint, have we budgeted over the years appropriately?
We trend over the years, and then even though we can't predict the exact emergency repair, we know about how many we get every year. It's kind of funny.
That's right.
I think typical biggest surprises we've seen are like from Home Depot and Utah Olympic Park. Right?
Yeah, the meter issues. Yeah. It's typical for us to do a budget amendment at the end of the year as part of our budget process for the next year. Because, you know, some departments might be overspent, some departments might be underspent, but collectively, you know, I think we've done a good job of avoiding those big gotchas.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions on the check register?
So my question was on the, like, it looks like there was a whole batch of treatment plant ones and a couple of the, you know, the Nickerson, the Rocky Mountain Power, and Jacobs Engineering. So is that all the plant optimization?
The Jacobs Engineering invoices would be the optimization study.
Yeah.
Grant bought 3 new feed pumps. They would have been from Nickerson. That was the increase that flow through the skids just to prep for summer peak season.
Yeah, okay.
Is Jacobs doing Summit also?
Doing
the Summit Park?
No, Jacobs is only doing the treatment plant.
And then it looked like we had a $13,000 landscape repair.
Yeah, Steve, that was a few different repairs you mentioned this morning, right?
Yeah, actually 4 different areas that we had to do a landscape repairs from leaks and, you know, have to run backhoes on things or whatever.
So it wasn't one house that we squarely.
Maybe call that the leak we had during the winter. And then 3 other locations. So it wasn't just one location. It was spread over several repairs that that company did for us.
Okay, great. Okay, so it looks like we have 1 purchase order for the chlorine generator.
You want to show that, Steve? You want to share that?
Has chlorine gone up?
So this is a generating, this is a system that generates, basically produces bleach.
Okay.
We use it at the treatment plant to disinfect our water that comes into the system. And the system that we have, Steve, I'm going to steal your thunder and give a little overview. The system that we have is butting up against its capacity, its, you know, its ability to meet the demands as we increase the demand of production. And we had a maintenance issue, a week or two ago, because we were on the fence of should we wait another year, what should we do? And then we had something broke on it. We just said, let's just get the new system. It's double the size of the old one. And that's what this PO is for, what the proposal was for behind it.
Scott, maybe you mentioned this, sorry, I was shuffling a couple of papers, but that it's sized enough to handle the expansion that we'll be doing at the plant.
Yep.
With Jacob.
I did not mention that, so thanks for adding that, Steve. So it's sized to be able to support the 6 million gallons a day, which is the target for the expansion in a few years.
Great.
So, cool.
Do we need to?
We need a motion to approve that. Yeah.
Approve the consent agenda and the PO specifically, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so motion to approve the consent agenda, as well as the PO for the PSI Technologies chlorine generation system for treatment plan.
Second.
So that was a motion by Ian, second by Tim.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous.
Aaron, would it be okay if I emailed that to you either tonight or in the morning, and you could just digitally sign that week?
Or I can stop by the office if it's easier too.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I could stop by the office if you need me to.
Okay.
If Anna's is Anna going to be in tomorrow? And if so, you can just leave it with Anna Steve, and she could have it ready for Karen.
Okay, I'll print out a hard copy and just leave it with Anna for tomorrow. Thank you.
Okay. I'll just put that in my calendar so I don't forget.
Oh, all right. So next up on the agenda is agenda item four, the certified. Let me get through the agenda up here. It's going to be consideration for recommendation of approval of the certified tax lien for delinquent fees and charges for the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District to the district's governing board. This isn't Dave Thomas's section. Dave's absent this evening. Joel, this is new for you, but what this is every year, at this time of year, we provide a list of all the delinquent accounts. The board reviews that, and if they're comfortable, forwards a recommendation for approval to the county council. County council then approves it. Summit County reimburses the district for all the delinquent charges and applies those as liens on the property taxes of all those delinquent parties.
Are these customers?
Customers. Okay. Yep. So that helps the district to stay whole.
Yep.
The county gets paid through property taxes. So this is a normal process that we go through.
Thank you very much.
The lists seem maybe shorter than some other years.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, Anna, do you want to just kind of comment on that? Ian mentioned it looks shorter.
Yes, it's a lot shorter. We're typically inverted. What, 50 and 100 customers that we typically lean this year, we have it down to less than 30, and in fact, a couple more have either made payment arrangements or paid off their balances. We seem to be like working down,
And then the total delinquent, 18K or so.
I had a question here. Is that I find this list to be unreviewable. I mean, what do you look for? I mean, there's a surname on there or an owner, and there's a dollar amount on there. And what would stand out to somebody reviewing this to say, I take objection to this number, line number 10? If you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. I think one item that may draw questions, not necessarily throw an approval or not, but just if there's, if there's some huge delinquency that you want to, get more information on. But I would agree with you, Tim, from a, if you're reviewing to approve or not, there's really nothing.
I don't object to the idea of people having to pay their water bills, and if they don't, I don't object to the idea of this going into this swap for a lien. But it has to go to the board for this, as opposed to just being an operational
process.
Procedure.
Yeah, it's a formal process. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know if the other board members found
wasn't
that.
There an issue last month that the treasurer wasn't going to pay us back? Has that been resolved? Or
that has been. Steve and Lisa were here to get that resolved.
Great. Good work, Steve and Lisa. Lisa's not here, is she?
Yeah, she's on.
Oh, she is.
So we need a recommendation?
Yeah, we had a good call with her and worked that out, and she's going to just understand the problem with our bond disclosures and what we said in our bond offerings if we don't get paid 100%. And then we did talk about the fact that historically, maybe it's been between, let's say, right around $40,000, but with Anna's hard work, you'll notice it's only $18,000 this year that she's still collecting. So we're only going to turn, we're not going to turn in that much lien amount to them this year even. So
Okay.
So is this the 2021 list? 2020 list?
So this is all, and Anna, correct me if I'm wrong, this is all delinquent charges from February of 2020 through current date, right? Through last week, basically, when the board packet was released.
Okay.
So they end up on your 2021 action for the
fee. And the extra fee that's put on there is by formula?
I thought it was just $20 for everybody.
Yeah, that sounds right. Anna, what's the extra fee? Is it $20 per customer?
Yes, $20 is the max that the state code allows you to charge.
And that's
it. That is covering your admin.
The administrative fee for it. Yeah.
Is that in our procedures?
That's a good question. I believe it is. That's in our rules and regs, correct?
What
are we doing, if anything, to minimize this? I mean, I know it's gone down the list. I mean, it's getting shorter, but. Are we talking to customers quick enough? Are we trying to minimize the disruption that we have in this process?
Anna, do you want to just touch on how you handle delinquent, you know, customer accounts and the contact that you make?
Yeah. So most of the ones that end up on this list are people that actually prefer it to go to their taxes because then they write it off. So most of these aren't necessarily homes that have water usage. There's a couple. But most of them are standby and they would just rather go to their like tax assessment because then they write it off.
So did you understand that? Many of them are standby fee customers who are not receiving water and they just don't pay it and it goes to the property taxes.
Yeah, like the two large ones in Stagecoach, they actually use their well, and they would rather it's just leave them anyway.
Because otherwise, Anna, we have a process where if somebody is more than 90 days late, they get a shutoff notice, correct?
Correct. They get a shutoff notice, they get another, I don't know, day, break, therapy, or pay it in full, or they get shut off.
So are the numbers in the list, have they been checked by someone?
How do we double check the you know the delinquent charges there? And have you reviewed that with Steve and Lisa?
Yes, we go through it. So this is just going to be a draft they approve because people will make payments even though we give them a deadline right up until we get it approved at the county council next month in July, we will update these and pull them off the exhibit as they need arrangements.
I'm just talking about things like numbers being transposed when it gets taken from
Yeah, and then it becomes a receivable from the county instead of from that individual customer in our books. So that entry always has to balance. So that's let's say besides reviewing the list as we're preparing it all the time, there's one final check as we prepare it that, you know, I've got to take as much off these accounts as I'm turning over to the county, so.
So is what we're reviewing is the presence on the list and not necessarily the dollar amount? I mean, the fact that they're on the list because, again, I don't have any way to check to see if it's the correct dollar amount that they're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's the entity that's on the list and that goes forward, that's what we're recommending then?
Yeah, I think it's the formal procedure.
Not the bottom line dollar amount.
Correct.
Okay.
Do the regs say, or charter, whatever, does it say once a year? I mean, should we increase it to more than once a year? I'm just asking the question because that lived up to a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may not think so. But that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I think...
From what I recall, you can only do it once a year. That was...
I think that makes, you know, I think that's true, Karen. I don't know the exact language in the rules and regs, but I'm assuming it says annually, and I can tell you the county, you know, like Steve and Lisa had to kind of work with the county to get this through.
Wow.
And all of these, I understand your point. I try to minimize these processes where boards got to recommend.
Yeah.
We got to go to council. It's a lot of work for everybody to review, and so I think once a year is appropriate.
It's a third of a percent of our customers.
Yeah,
it's not very high.
Yeah.
I was wondering why there were colony, you know, property owners that weren't paying their bills, but that now makes sense.
You would think they have enough money, huh?
Well, I mean, like, why would you have a tax problem for $400, you know? So, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So when you're ready, the language for the motion's up there at the top of the page.
Recommendation of approval of the certified tax lien for delinquent fees and charges for Mountain Regional Water Special Service District to the district's governing board.
Second.
So that was motion by Ian and second by Joel.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. I want the spirit of Mike to be here. I know Mike always wants it to be unanimous.
Yeah, there you go.
If not, we have a conversation.
Yes.
All right, agenda item number 5, consideration of approval of the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company annexation fee agreement. So as you can recall from last month, we kind of batted this idea around a little bit, right? We had a conversation about, my recommendation was we should put an agreement in place with Pine Meadows as opposed to trying to estimate what the total fee is going to be. That way they essentially pay, you know, the actual amount of annexation and we can just get to work, right? We can start working on all these different reviews we have to do. We had a conversation about whether or not the district should have the contracts with, say, the engineering service provider, the attorneys, right, to be reviewing all this stuff, or whether that should be Pine Meadows. There was some, I think, people on both sides of that fence last meeting. I discussed Dave Thomas and I batted this around. Dave's recommendation was let Pine Meadows do it. My recommendation is that we do. The reason is if we let Pine Meadows do all of these studies, at the end of the day, that information is going to come to us. It's probably not going to be, I'll just say we're going to have questions about it. We're likely going to have to contract again, right, or get things resolved. It's not going to be an efficient process. At the end of the day, it's going to cost the Pine Meadows customers more money. And my feeling is we hold the risk regardless. If Pine Meadows can't pay for all of the fees to be annexed, it's not like we just walk away, right? It doesn't work like that. Pine Meadows, as long as they don't find some water source, Pine Meadows is going to annex into our district.
Yep.
So let's manage the process ourselves when we're reviewing something that's going to become ours. Make it as efficient as possible. And I put a provision in here that if they can't pay the total fee, we can put it in the infrastructure assessment, which is very similar to how the community water process plan. So my recommendation is we manage it, we invoice them monthly. The categories that, you know, as Dave drafted here, it would be staff time, it would be outside legal fees. If we hire a project manager, that would be covered. Engineering consultant fees, and any financial advisor fees that we need to get the support we need. And then there's a bill every month. And again, we've got top cover. If they can't pay, we just load it into the infrastructure assessment.
So the bottom line is we're more in control.
we have control, and I think that we're covered financially just as well as we would be in the alternative path.
And there's really good precedent from this. I mean, we've had multiple entities that have come to us, and then their systems don't meet our standards, and we have to do rework. And that's happened multiple times since I've been on the board. This is a great analogy of, you know, using the learnings from the past to be proactive moving forward.
And some of the data, like with Community Water, you know, being the most recent, some of the data that we got from their stuff, you know, like Scott was saying, wasn't up to snuff. We ended up, you know, making some educated guesses and sometimes blind guesses as to what was really, you know, what was really the case with some of the information.
And there's pieces of, you have to know some things about our system to understand how they're going to integrate. If you just get a piece of paper that says, well, this is how their system looks, it's not enough. Right? We want to know how do they look when we bring them together.
It's too late now, but we did a due diligence before we signed Pine Meadows to operate.
Well, this essentially will start the due diligence. So what this is an agreement that will allow us to be, you know, paid for the due diligence efforts, right? We do the due diligence, we understand what we need to do, and then essentially the typical process is then we go to the state, we get a low interest loan and make whatever improvements need to be done.
Okay.
And then those customers pay that loan back as an assessment.
All right. Because I know from a realtor standpoint, Pine Meadows can be problematic. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Even if they have one.
And I think to my earlier point, Joel, one of the, you know, I feel like we mentioned this at least once a year, one of the charters of the district is that we're the supplier of last resort, basically. So, you know, the council will look to us to help to support those systems in need.
Good.
In the draft agreement, there's a 6% per annum for not payment. That looks like it sounds to me like it's a little disconnected from what your plan is that if they don't pay, it gets rolled in. It doesn't make any sense to roll in that plus 6%. So you might want to take a look at that and see under this context whether a payment a month late or something, if it's worth even putting that in there. I know why it's in there.
Yeah.
I just think with your plan, it might not make any sense in this case.
Yeah. A couple other points that I want to make that you just helped me with there, Tim. One is we've had internal discussions about should there be an upfront, good faith initial payment. What you call it, a retainer, call it a good faith payment, call it what you want. The number we've batted around is $25,000 just to start the process. You know, I would be comfortable with essentially using that as the initial invoice that started to come in. And, you know, essentially just that initial payment to say we're serious, let's go. Curious to know what the board thinks about that.
Yeah, I did just want to get quick. Go with our pants down. And that's my biggest concern. Whether it's 25 or 50 or 35, you know, that's up to you guys.
To put it into context, essentially the fee for Community Water, when it was all said and done, was on the order of $500,000. So
you can do that. And if they pay it, it's wonderful. But the question is, if you don't do it, does that mean we're dead?
I don't
know. I think it's a good way to test the water and say, are you serious
or
not?
But when you make a demand like that, they say no. Then what's your next step? Because what you've done before is you've moved up to the 30,000 feet perspective on there.
Yeah.
And so it looks like when we go in there and want advance payment on it, we're getting a little bit lower down again. But ask for it. It's just, they don't pay it, you gotta have a plan. And the plan is not, we're gonna stop. And so it's almost like you don't really need it, you're just asking for it to see if
it's a good, I mean, the course wouldn't change, right? I think that's your point.
Be ready to move off it real quick. We're charging the 6%.
Any other thoughts on that?
I'm comfortable with your recommendation.
I thought it was really well thought out.
To include it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If that's your recommendation, I'm comfortable with that. Okay.
The last thing is the signature block will be edited in the final agreement for Pine Meadows. It reads Pine Meadow Ranch Homeowners Association. It should be Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company. So that's another change that will be made in the final form.
Okay.
So when we get to the point you're ready for a motion, I just need a motion to include all those things we've talked about. The review of the 6%, whether or not it's appropriate to be in there, the change of the signature block, and the recommendation for the good faith initial payment.
And I did just want to clarify, we said there had been a comment, not the last board meeting, but one prior, I believe, about the Pine Meadows Forest Meadows. So just to be clear, the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company encompasses both the Pine Meadows and the Forest Meadows subdivision. That is the entirety. Those 800 lots we're talking about are both subdivisions. So there was some question about when does that other shoe drop. This is it. The Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company is for both subdivisions. Just to make sure everybody's on the same page with this.
So we're not going to get it again.
Right.
Correct.
Yep. That's a good.
Yeah. We will. We just.
Yeah. We not from these guys.
Right.
So we need a motion.
Sure. So
the discussion.
Motion for approval of the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company annexation fee agreement per discussion within the board meeting.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're unanimous.
All right, agenda item number 6 stays in my court here. So the first item is discussion regarding participation in Summit County's pending design and construction contract with GSBS Architects for the Summit County Services Development. So, again, this is furthering our discussion about a new office facility that we've been having for some time now. Right? I think last month where we were was I had learned that Mountain Regional was a stakeholder in the master planning process for Summit County's services subdivision that they're master planning right now, which is to the east of Home Depot. How we're included at the moment is to identify the parcel, the location, and the size of the parcel that would be integrated into the Summit County Services subdivision. Since last board meeting, I have been to two meetings with the Summit County Stakeholder Group and GSBS Architects, their whole team of land planner, architects, project managers, civil designers, etc. I was very impressed the first time that I met with them. They were selected through a competitive procurement process where the county did a statement of qualification process, and they did an interview process and down-selected the GSBS. After that initial meeting, my thought was, why aren't we just using them through our entire process, not just the selection of the parcel, but the design of the facility, as well as the, you know, what limited construction observation that may be typical in that sort of a contract. I reached out to Dave Thomas to ask him, how does the procurement process work? And he said, basically, the county's done the correct procurement process. You don't need to do anything else. What we would need is a reimbursement agreement that we would sign with Summit County to say that any costs incurred on our behalf is just passed through to us, and that we pay the county. We met with Derek Radke, who led. Derek's the head of public works for the county. We met with him because he led this whole procurement process to understand, you know, just get his gut check on why they picked GSBS, how that process went. It was Chris and I and Lisa met with Derek. I think we all left
contacting me, feeling good about the process. They also, GSBS also talked about integrating, you know, some themes through the subdivision with the buildings that they're designing. And my recommendation is, let's integrate into the county's process. Let's let GSBS do the design of our facility as well. Construction observation, if we feel like that's a piece that's important to us. There's going to be a couple off-ramps. You know, one is going to be when we understand the size of the parcel and what it's going to cost, right? There's also going to be a conceptual design process where we understand, in general, a conceptual design of the facility and a cost estimate of the facility, right? These are points in which we can take an off-ramp and say, we're not going to go any further. I think the general consensus of the staff, and I certainly would recommend to the board, that we should go through at least purchasing the parcel. It's going to be in a spot that makes sense. It's integrated into the county's master plan process. I think if we get sticker shock from the parcel, but we can do it, I say we get the parcel, and then we postpone the design and construction. You know, and then if we get further along, design comes in, cost isn't something we're willing to pay, we can set that aside. But, you know, my recommendation is let's just integrate it into the county's process.
How far does GSBS take it? I mean, do they go to construction documents?
Yep, and that will
be actually design the facility?
Yes, and construction management observation.
Is there a... our design is going to get paid by ratepayers. We've got a budget for it. The other designs that are being done by the counties are probably going to be coming in from tax base or something like that.
Yep.
Is there going to be sort of a normalization of the architectural features going through GSBS? Where
I think that we'll have full control over, you know, what our building
looks like. Let's say you want a gym in your facility.
Yep.
Okay. Are we going to get somehow into a deal where nobody else is getting the gym, we're not getting the gym?
No, my understanding is we'll full autonomy over our design. We're going to work directly.
So you can get locker rooms and all this other sort of stuff. Because it wouldn't be something that you would typically see in some of the other county buildings for whatever reason.
Correct.
And, you know, we've got our own visibility issues with ratepayers to make sure that we're taking, you know, minding the shop. But I just wanted to know, would they be designing that with, like, a design that you wanted, the look, or is it going to be something that's going to have this theme that goes throughout the entire park?
No, when I say themes that run through the park, I'm talking about things like sustainability and some other concepts like that. I think from an architectural finishing standpoint, you know, I think quite simply we're going to have full autonomy over how we want the building to look and feel and what's going to go in it. Will there maybe be some themes architecturally that go building to building? Possibly, but I think if we don't like those themes, then we would have the authority to change.
So we're going to have like separate ingress and egress for equipment and stuff to a garage that's different where the customers might be
very much
and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's one item we talked about already.
We get any price break on the land? Or reduce fee? I'm sorry to ask that question.
Time will tell.
Could you divulge who the realtor is?
Well, in this case, Summit County is the realtor.
Oh, Summit County is the realtor. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
So it's part of the... It's part of the Gilmore parcel, a big transaction that happened with somebody last year.
Yeah.
So there's 120 odd acres of developable land.
Did you ask a question about soil and contamination?
So that was part of their process in the subdivision plat, was they had to go through the feds to get a portion of that parcel removed to make it developable. So that's if you look on the tax map, there's a whole strip that's right down that is dedicated open space because it is hazardous soil. So
as an aside, You didn't, I did say this. Recently you tossed a key of land at the Gordo. I'm the sheriff, recently you talked. We're looking at land that may be contaminated. So that's why I asked the question.
We've been through that process ourselves with pipeline projects and stuff. We know exactly how that whole process works.
Yeah. Okay, good. Sorry to ask the question.
You know we're all recorded right now, right?
Oh, yeah. So you did say that. I did say that.
Yeah. just FYI.
That's fine. Obviously, I don't want to see you screwed in any way. Yeah. And now I put on my realtor hat.
No, I'm comfortable with the county's process.
Okay.
And so there's no formal approval that I need from you. I'm just looking for a general head nod that we're headed in the right direction.
It sounded appropriate last time you brought it up, and since your gut feel has been proved along the way, then yeah.
And as we know more, we'll have the ability to say, are you kidding me? Or, you know, it's reasonable.
Tumor protection.
Yeah. What'd you say?
It's not a good idea to get tumor protection.
That was my feeling as well.
It's like having two lawyers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're recording this, right?
So Dave gets for not being here.
His loss.
Alright, next up on the agenda is 6B, update regarding current drought conditions and related district actions. I'm not going to read all the words on this sheet. I provided an overview in the packet that had the high level events and some data from last year through this year. I talked about all the things the district is doing to try to communicate with our customers and try to reduce usage. I will say that the more we learn, I think the scarier it gets, not necessarily from a district data standpoint, right? From a district perspective, Weber Basin didn't restrict our Lost Canyon allocation. We have the ability to use all of it. From a groundwater perspective, I reviewed all of our groundwater data last week. It all looks good, looks where I would expect it to look this time of year. But the more we hear about, you know, folks saying that the runoff this year is the worst ever, and one data point that sticks out that Weber Basin released is, in an average year, Weber Basin stores 220,000 acre feet of water from runoff. This year they stored 7,000.
Wow.
Basically nothing. So I think that's what we've been batting around as staff as being particularly troubling. And, you know, I think that let's hope we're skiing really deep powder this winter, because if we don't have a big winter, I think the cuts will be far deeper than what we're experiencing now into those higher levels in our drought plan that we talked about earlier this year.
And we need a wet fall and a wet spring.
Yes.
Because the soil moisture is so, we've talked about this a bunch, but the soil moisture is so low that the surface water runoff index can't go out, right? I mean, the soils have to pick up that water. So unless we resaturate a bunch of the soils, or at least bring the moisture contents up and have a big winter, we're, next year is going to be the same as this year, if not worse.
Have we contacted, I know so we should, but I'm asking the question. Have we contacted the HOAs
about
watering? Because I want to tell you something. I know we're recording, but I'm really pissed off because our HOA was watering at high noon, and that's not a good time. That's not a good time. Gosh darn it. I don't care if they do it 2 in the morning or early in the morning or late at night or whatever. But, I mean, I was really pissed off.
Not at noon, that's not good.
So much humidity.
And so, that's just the front and the common areas. But I think these ways, all of them, anywhere that Mountain Regional touches, The HOAs need to know they shouldn't water.
Yeah. So communicating with the HOAs is in process, and at least are working on that. Okay. One, the a couple quick updates that aren't in the sheet. One is Mountain Regional is moving forward with enforcing our watering schedule, which basically says you're not allowed to water more than every other day. So Anna and Steve have been working on a way to pull meter data, run a report on anybody that's using, they've got a threshold for use that would be that would tell us they're watering outside. And they're going to, identify all the customers that are watering more than every other day. And they're all going to receive letters. The first letter is a warning per our rules and regs. And then we have three tiers of fines that follow that. So that's the first thing I don't think the district has ever done this before. The next thing is that conversations with Summit County, they are considering adopting the governor's recommendation, which was no more than two waterings a week.
Oh, I thought you were going to go pray.
I know. I'm glad to know that there was more than just praying in his, business plan on this. Yeah.
It did rain the next day, though. Yeah. It really did.
So I'm working with Summit County and some other stakeholders as well. The idea is I think there will be a work session in front of council. We'll talk to council about it. If they're supportive of it, then I think the net gets cast to the cities and the county and all that to try to get a consistent message across the county.
I think that as far as the board members here probably had to come in and look and make sure that we're following the
I'm down to 2 days a week. I had to figure out my irrigation system and everything.
I wanted to figure out the irrigation, and actually it took a while to get it to where it was supposed to go. Generally cut back on 25% of the gallons or something like that. But I think as a board member, we probably have to make sure that we can make a positive statement that says we're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're asked a question when you're on KBR or something like that, wherever you're going, KPCW, you should at least be able to say our board members are following. Even though it's not a matter of public record.
Yeah. And is the threshold they're going to use if you're over, say for residential, over 5,000 gallons per month?
What threshold? The Steve and Lisa, or Steve and Anna part? So they're, with the back of meters, they're pulling it, they can pull it by week even, right?
You can pull it day.
Or a week.
They pulled it by day, and right now our first sort criteria was customers who use more than 1,000 gallons in a day were obviously watering outside.
Okay.
And then we sorted, so we got all the customers who use more than 1,000 gallons 7 days in a row. Or how many days did they do that in 7 days? And that's our first list that we're going through and highlighting and noting those customers. So we might drop that threshold down, but that first threshold of you use more than 1,000 gallons basically every day, so we know you're watering outside every day.
Got it.
They're going to be our first ones who'll get letters.
Okay, I can meet that one for sure. Easy. But then I thought there was a conversation at one point that if people were using over 5,000 residential in a month and they went to that higher tier instead of $1.82 or whatever to $2.40 or whatever it is, then that was assumed to be watering.
Yeah, so that's coming from our drought plan, right, Steve? Where we get into level 4 or 5, and the drought surcharges kick in, right?
Yeah, basically, the first tier goes to 5,000, the next tier goes up to 20,000, and for our drought plan, basically, we let them get up to 20,000 before we said, okay, that's obviously outside water that you don't have to use. Even if it's a big gallon, you can sustain it for 20,000 gallons a month or whatever. And so that's when we really started increasing the cost per tier or the conservation rates.
Okay.
I mean, I really don't think people take this very seriously.
I'd agree with you.
I mean, and I'm not saying we're not doing our job, but what I guess I'm saying is communication.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually they'll understand it. I think the other thing people need to realize is that justification is really important. Whether we talk to recently Utah or the landfill or whoever, but we need to reduce our water to Jesus Christ. Where is there so much freaking water? It's ridiculous. I'm not telling my own horn, but we just gave our yard because we just don't want to use the water, and people really need to step up to the plate. Whether that means we say here's a list of all the drought tolerant plants or bushes or trees or whatever, we should do as much as we can to communicate that people need to conserve water and how. These are tips on conserving water. You guys know better than I do.
Yeah, I agree with Joel on the communication piece. Like, you know, just my little realm, I don't have a lot of friends, but the people I have talked to about, like, restrictions that are coming and restrictions, you know, for this year, none of them heard anything. So
I feel like KPCW has been doing a great job of, they're running a story at least once a week on water, the water situation, whether it's from Mountain Regional, from Park City, from folks at the NRCS, Camas, the city mayors, I feel like they're
maybe 2% of the people that listen to the radio or listen to anything listen to them, right?
Yeah.
And so they could be doing it constantly.
I mean, the question that we've been talking about internally is, I mean, if you're doing the radio, you're doing the newspaper, you're doing the information on the website, you're doing the billings, you're sending letters, you're sending newsletters, what else can we do besides go pound on everybody's door?
That's my question is, I mean, I feel like I read the minutes, I know what you guys are doing, I can't see anything else. I mean, I can't think of anything myself that I would do more. It seems like you're doing everything, and yet almost everyone I've run into hasn't even heard of this issue. They know there's a drought, they know, like, you know, the governor's made some mandates and such, but they don't know anything about their local community restrictions this year or coming. So
could there be some signage? Like, remember Park City used to have a thing where if you were watering every third day, you could get a sign that went in your yard that says, I'm watering every third day, so your neighbors don't really, you know, you're watering on the wrong day or whatever. But I'm wondering if, you know, we could have something like that, you know, a sign that goes in
something
your yard that says,
like a Smokey the Bear with a shovel or something.
That says, I'm watering twice a week to save water per stomach, or, you know, national guidance.
Like a flow board on the two main roadways.
I like that idea.
I've advocated public shaming.
Yeah.
So I'll chat with Lisa now about that suggestion.
I mean, I'm not that concerned about it this year. I think we can meet our 20% target. I'm concerned about next year.
I agree.
Just with the writing on the wall. And I hadn't heard that number about the 7K surface water this year.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It scares me even more.
Yeah.
So I'm really worried next year we are going to be below 50% in Rockport, and then that triggers the lower or the next tiers in the drought plan for Weber Basin. And that's where I'm really worried about. How do we get to those levels with the next, you know, steps within the Weber Basin drought contingency?
Well, if you have any other ideas, let us know.
I think it's one we should keep talking about,
yeah.
I mean, that's a great start, Karen.
Yeah, just because, like, in my neighborhood, not everybody's from here,
So. One of the other things that we brought up with staff talking about it is manpower, right? So if you're talking about policing this, so, you know, we don't have a budget item for policing this, right? So we don't have enough staff currently to be able to do this. So this is one of the other things we're talking about for budgeting for next year. We're talking about that stuff now. How do we plan for this?
Yeah, I mean, because just in my past experience as an HOA president, having to send out letters for, you know, things like weeds, for thistle. I mean, it can be a full-time job sending, because you have to go and you first have to observe it, and then you have to send a letter and say, you know, if you don't do it, I'm going to send somebody over to your house to kill the thistle, and I'm going to charge you for it. I mean, you know, but it's almost a full time job for somebody just doing all the enforcement.
Yeah, Scott's a good metric. Phoenix, you're talking about their budget for their water.
Oh, that's the Southern Nevada Water Authority, who's the most progressive. With respect to conservation, they're the most progressive, have the biggest budget, biggest numbers, and they've got, I forget the exact numbers, they have a $22.5 million budget for their conservation team and 45 employees.
Wow.
So that's double the size of the district, basically.
But they just outlawed grass, like, everywhere in Nevada, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, maybe just I want to make one more point about staffing now, your point about noticing, Aaron. I mean, Lisa and Anna and I just discussed this week. Anna's going to run this report, and she's going to get 2,000 customers, basically.
Is she doing that? Yeah.
Right? How does Anna... Anna can't begin to manage that whole thing, right? She's going to have to stop everything that she's doing. Oh, by the way, development is going nuts. Like,
yeah.
Our office is crazy right now.
Yeah.
So,
and even if you email and write a letter and call them, they're going to say, oh, I didn't know.
We're going to do the best we can. We're going to start from the worst offenders and work our way down. That's all we can do.
Yeah, we've only got one Anna, and we want to keep her.
Well, yeah.
We don't want to burn her out, right?
Yeah. But they built these new houses. Are they in there trying to establish landscaping? Does that take a lot more water?
One of the points that a lot of the new developments, like I'm on a design review committee, and I stress sustainability, less grass, less anything that's conserved water.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, one of the things I think we should do, and I'm just talking out loud, is talk to the design review committees, talk to all the other entities in the area that have anything to do with landscaping, because I know I'm repeating myself, this is a freaking mess.
Yeah, we are working with Summit County on looking at, is there opportunities to make amendments to the code for new development to start with? You know, should we, for instance, park strips, like, why are we putting grass in park strips? There's no point to it.
It takes you
more
water.
In my opinion.
I agree.
But if there's no other comments on that, let's keep moving so we don't keep you all night.
Okay.
Number 7, financial management. Steve, do you want to give an update on the May results?
You bet. Looks like you're going to share the screen. So, can everybody see the normal finance report?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So we're running about $1.2 million above, but better than budget right now. As you may recall, last month we were about $1.1 million better. So we've added about another $100,000 during May of now. It's made up of $1 million in over budget in revenue and about $200,000 below expenses on budget. The revenue overage, as we talked about last month, is from those development-related collections, where we're at, you know, almost $1.4 million. Budget was $596,000. Last year, we were only at $564,000. Development-related collections at this point in the year. Just impact fees, assessments from promontory selling lots, all of it is really going crazy. So all that construction you see, that's where it shows up in our books, is right there in the development-related collections. The water sales are about $200,000 over budget at this point in time. So basically, if you took out development-related collections, we'd be about $200,000 better in revenue because of water and about $200,000 better because of lower expenses. So moving on to the expenses a little bit, we're seeing savings in operations and or maintenance and repairs, also in non-OEMR. Probably what I wanted to just call your attention to is when we compare this year to last year, our expenses are only up 1.5%. That's kind of over here on this right side, if you can see that where the cursor maybe is. So that's a good indicator for us that we're running what we expected a little tighter than we actually planned. Cash, our cash, because of all this revenue, continues to increase significantly. You see that we've got a total of almost $19 million. $7.5 million of that is in our cash reserve, basically our operating funds. We did just pay off that debt with Zions that you approved last month for over $500,000, so that cash amount will come down. So we made payment to Zions, and I've invoiced Park City for their portion, and they said they'll get the payment right over. So that worked out well. We're going to save some interest expense over the years by having done that. And it was a good use of our cash at this point in time, since we were getting almost to a year's worth of reserves on hand. Sorry, I'm just kind of going through this. If we're not being there with you, but if you have any questions, please just feel free to speak up.
You're doing great.
Yeah, we'll take that break to congratulate you, Steve. That's a huge savings for the district. Thank you.
That. Our customer growth, so we are at $563,000 in impact fees through May. We've already collected a bunch in June, so we are already over budget for the year. So I'm glad Karen talked us into increasing it a little bit. I should have let her talk me into increasing it more. We are at 169 new connections, which is 123. So if you do the math, we usually only have 46 at this point in the year, above the four-year average. This was a little interesting. I thought I'd share last month. I kind of broke it out by area. This time I just wanted to break it out by month. So you can see in January it was 10, February 47, March 51, April 44, and then it kind of dropped a little bit in May down to 16.
Steve, you just scroll to
the top.
Okay.
So that's where the 169 connections through May, how they were broken down by month. Looks like June, we're going to be above May. We'll have to see by the end of June, but it's picking back up, let's say. Promontory has sold 47 lots, so we've collected 47 assessments. Usually they're only at 12 at this point in the year. So, yeah, I'm sure there's construction trucks going. Well, I know. I see them going up there all the time right now. So it's busy. And then a little comment on usage. So the district, our own customers were above the four-year average, but probably what I should want to draw more attention to is this year in May, we used 42.4 million gallons for 138 acre feet. Last year in May, it was 53.6 or 165 acre feet. So we did see a drop in usage from last May to this May. So that's a good sign. Last May was really hot and dry. I'm very curious, as I'm sure all of you are, to see how June usage numbers come in and how effective we're being with our messaging. And if we can continue that trend, that would be great. Park City.
Hey, Steve, Joel has a question.
Is it also because we're getting smarter and better at making repairs with the release?
So this is, Steve, this is actual meter usage at the point of use, correct?
That is correct. This is billed usage, so it's not lost in the system. Now, if somebody has a leak, it is still count to this, but we're getting better at notifying them, and they're getting better at fixing it quickly. But it's not, let's say the systemic loss is not included in this number, just something that ends up on a bill. Now, we may do a leak adjustment for that customer, so the dollar amount may drop, but we always track how much water goes through the meters in this.
And I would just say, I know Anna's been working hard, and Jackie as well, on communicating with customers that do have leaks on their side of the meter. So a portion of that is definitely from that communication, but likely not all. I think a lot, you know, certainly there's a weather factor in there as well.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
You bet. So yeah, Park City is taking, they have the rights for 2,900 acre feet. They're currently on pace to take about 2,800 acre feet, which would be the most they've ever taken for the system. So we're kind of watching that too.
That's anticipated,
yeah,
because of the top three, yeah, Three Kings being down, and the Quinns might be in full capacity. So.
And that finishes next year?
2023, they'll be producing water.
10 more. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Capital budget-wise, we did get that contract from Newman Construction to start the Kilby Road water line. So I was just finishing up some of the legal paperwork on that.
You know, I signed it today.
We've received a lot of that Spring Creek stuff, and we'll be paying for it, but that's kind of encumbered. Probably in the check register, you saw we paid for one of the trucks. The other one is part of the Ford fleet that's waiting outside their plant for the semiconductor chips. So hopefully we'll get that filled this summer sometime. So, and then community water, still on target to try to finish that all up this summer so we can get that all capitalized and officially on our books as individual assets and not just work in process. Here's the retail water sales graph. And as you'll see, our water sales, the total revenue amount was below last year because of the usage, because this is a combination of both base and water usage charges. So the fact that we've added quite a bit of base but still came in below revenue for last year is another indicator of the decreased usage by our customers during May this year. And then this is kind of just May budget. Everything, the promontory, the irrigation gulf, they did kind of turn on at their normal time. So they're a little ahead of budget. Again, it'll be interesting to see how their June, whether they've been able to taper that down a little bit or at least trying to hold it consistent. So that's all I have for tonight, unless there's any other questions about any other finance topics.
That looks good.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. You bet.
All right, next up then, agenda item 8, Lisa Hoffman with a customer service update regarding the customer survey results. Lisa, are you with us? She is.
Yep, I'm here.
Lisa's in San Diego.
I'm just trying to share my screen.
Your flight was okay?
Yeah, the flight was fine. I made it. But I've been driving. Luckily, I just got here, so I can share this with you. I'm just trying to, here we go. Okay, can everybody see the survey?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So we did our very first Mountain Regional customer survey. Well, first that I'm aware of, I'm pretty sure it's our first one. Just to kind of, a really brief summary, we wanted to see what kind of response we would get to some, really brief questions, but just kind of take the pulse of our customers and, how we're doing, areas we can improve, and, I don't anticipate this will be our last one. I'd like to definitely build on it. topics around drought are coming to mind, some other ways we can better communicate with our customers. So we had about 185 responses, which I thought was, I was expecting like 10. So I thought that wasn't a bad number to start with. The most response we received, because we could kind of tell as we came different, used different methods to try to communicate, we sent an email through Express Bill Pay, and that seemed to generate the most response. And from the survey, if you've kind of gone through it, you can also see that most folks, whether it be backflow or just regular communication, prefer that email really is the best method of communication for them. So that was good to know. I was, pleasantly surprised that as far as what people know about Mountain Regional, hit kind of that familiar, somewhat familiar, very familiar category. I thought that was good. We can do more, like we said, to try to communicate and put our message out there. So, but I think we have a good place to start from. The how satisfied are you with different of our services, our quality levels, dependability, responsiveness. That purple bar right there is a 5 scoring, which pretty much we hit in every category, with the exception of responsiveness to water leaks, only because I think not everybody has experienced one, but those who had did choose that 5 category the most over the others. But you see a lot of purples and greens there, so I think we're doing a good job. I was a little bit surprised by Express Bill Pay, because sometimes we do get a lot of feedback that people think Express Bill Pay is unfriendly and they don't like it. But it looks like the majority, at least the people that responded to our survey, think Express Pay is a great tool. We asked about how often they would like communications quarterly, with the majority of the answers here, and we're doing that messaging, at least, consistent messaging with that newsletter. Obviously, with the drought, we'll be doing more messaging, but I think quarterly, consistently quarterly messaging with the newsletter will be our go-to. Again, the email communication, social media, actually the majority, 63%, said no, they would follow us on social media. So we try to at least have that platform available. We obviously know there are different generational customers and we need to kind of be hitting everything. And we push, every time we put a message out, we're posting it on social media or website. As long as usually in our bill messages. So we'll continue to do that, but just kind of wanted to get a flavor of if they would follow us, and if they would, what would their preferred message would be, and that's Facebook and Instagram, kind of what I would have expected. Are you signed up for Ion Water? It's about a 50-50 split. I was, we do have some work here to do. This is still try to message how people can get signed up. And I was catching some of Karen's comment about other ways to try to communicate with our customers, and I think you were mentioning yard signs. So maybe not only with, a watering schedule, we can also put, sign up for Ion Water. I don't know, but trying to get clever, I also think maybe we need to incentivize, do some kind of, way to try to incentivize people to sign up. Backflow prevention, we just kind of wanted to get curious about if people understand if they have a backflow or not, if they do, what kind it was, and what kind of communications they would prefer. Again, email was the winner there. We have been working with Lieber Basin on a program that they are running to try to do a water audit or a water check on people's homes. So we wanted to take people's temperature on if they would be interested. The majority said no. This may change after the drought, who knows. But right now, they weren't really interested. We asked if you'd be willing to pay a fee, a nominal fee, and it was kind of a no or maybe. So maybe some more work to do there. Would you be interested in rebates or incentives? This one is really the one that kind of hit home. I think people are really interested in incentives. and rebates. We have the ones that are available now to customers on our website. The StrictFit is an incentive to flip your, the strips on your sidewalk there. And some other rebates for smart water, I think toilet stuff and other appliances inside your home on indoor stuff. But this is another area I think we've already started to explore other ways for us to possibly use incentives. That might be tearing out grass, doing other things to get people engaged and interested in the conservation effort. Equal pay would be something where you would pay, the same amount, an average amount of that bill over a certain period of time. So it would be a little bit tricky. We have had customers inquire about it. We've never gone down that road. Our accounting software does allow for it, but we just wanted to take a temperature. If it was something that people were really interested in, we would consider it, but that was only 16.9% yes. So I think for right now, we're going to just leave that one alone. We've got some other things we need to be tackling right now. So, and like Anna mentioned, our names are pretty good. We've done a lot of work on trying to communicate with customers and get payment plans going and letters, and so I think that's really helped with the collection end. So that we'll just keep that on the back burner for now, but something to think about in the future. I think we had some great customer comments. That first one there, I thought our customer service individual was wonderful. I'm not sure who exactly it was, but Aunt Jackie were great, so either one of them. Handle any kind of comments and even complaints, questions. They handle the customers really well, so I'm really appreciative of the work that they've been doing. People like the Aya Water, it's an awesome app. They have asked for better communication, which we're working on. We always get water, well, not always, but your water's hard, it doesn't taste good, it's murky, you get some comments like that. Lower price, improved taste. There was an observation the very wealthy are not incentivized by conservation rates, but might take notice of steep fees for overuse of water. So that's another thing we've been throwing around. We talked about a little bit earlier. If we want to make those higher tiers steeper, so you really get into some hefty fees if you're using an exorbitant amount of water. So it's something we're talking about. We're also talking about maybe doing a leak rate if people aren't paying attention to their leaks. Maybe that water is now at a really exorbitant rate to try to promote people taking care of those leaks as soon as they're notified and not letting them go for 30 days, 60 days. And cost, people also mentioned cost. It's hitting the bottom line harder and they want to continue to keep costs down, which I think we're very mindful of and try to do a good job to be as efficient as we can. I know we've taken some steps for sure over the last few years to try to do that and make sure we're making the best use of our customers' fees. So action items, we've updated Cassell and Everbridge with the customer contact information we collected. That was helpful to get emails and phone numbers. We addressed some billing questions that came through. Jackie was able to reach out to those customers and get that taken care of. We were having some paperless billing issues that people mentioned, so we tried to respond to all comments and follow up with people right away. Like we talked about, we'll explore district incentives. And then I also mentioned exploring the water audit program. And we have our customer service operator that works with Anna John, and we've had some discussions with him. He's worked with some of the Weber Basin folks to see how their program runs. And I think there are some improvements that we could make that may be more tailored for our users. And so we're coming up with some ideas and brainstorming on what kind of service we can provide to our customers to help with their irrigation needs and, broken sprinkler heads, or just trying to, go around and give customers some good information on how they're doing their irrigating. Like I mentioned, can continue to try to get ways for people to sign up for Aya Water. And we'll continue our communication efforts And not only during the drought, obviously that's an emergency, but during other water emergencies. So the more we can communicate with our customers now and find those best practices and find where we're getting our best bang for our buck, like Ian mentioned, obviously, not that I want to say this is a test run because this drought is bad, but next year could be much worse. And so if we can find that spot where we can communicate with people the most effectively and try to reach the largest audience we can, I think that's most appropriate. We also do now have Everbridge up, and that also could be a path for us to use to push this watering messaging. And the problem, not the problem, but what I've experienced with Everbridge and what people have said to me, you don't want to overuse it because then people stop, don't want you to, don't sign up for it or stop using it. So you want to use it as effectively as you can to not bother people by sending a text or an email or, you know, blasting them all the time, but use it for really important information and targeted information that you can get out to people. So, yes, that's all I have. Were there any questions?
I like the Everbridge topic. I'm in full agreement on that. Like, this year, no, probably not appropriate. But next year, that's a great tool to have in our arsenal.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like I...
Go ahead, Lisa.
Sorry. Like I said, people really responded with email. So I sent out that, we sent that email blast on Express Bill Pay. You know, we had 150 responses by the next morning. So, and that wasn't hitting all of our customers. That was hitting customers who were signed up with Express Bill Pay, which there are a number. So, yeah, just continuing to work through the best way to communicate, I think we'll continue to refine that and make it a better process.
When do you think you'd do a survey like this again, Lisa? Like every couple of years, or was it so insightful that you might want to do this on a yearly basis? Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've been thinking maybe on a yearly basis.
Cool.
So it was nice to get some information. As people start to think about landscape or, you know, think about water again, and we start to get a little bit, before it gets too busy, it's nice to kind of get that. So May was kind of a good time to do that, to get some feedback. I'd like to do something again, and like I said, definitely maybe towards drought or if we're talking about incentives, some other things that we can potentially get some more feedback from our customers on. And reaching a larger audience now with Everbridge. So we didn't have Everbridge in place. I wanted to get it out before Everbridge was finally live. So I think we can use Everbridge and get a better response too.
Any other questions for Lisa?
Nope.
Thanks a bunch, Lisa. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay, thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye. Travel safe.
All right, on to agenda item 9, questions on department updates. Ian, you want to kick it off?
Here I go.
Go for it.
Back to you. So, Red Hawk site concerns.
Yeah.
Update there. Is any progress?
We signed a mitigation agreement today. Got an updated easement agreement, and it's all put to bed.
No way.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So Chris and I worked with the property owner, his legal counsel, and Ryan Staff from the Summit County Attorney's Office. And Utah Broadband, and they proposed a much more modernized antenna array that they could camouflage. Property owner was happy with it. They were in the process of selling that property, so the prospective buyer was happy with it. Now we have 12 weeks to get a finished low impact permit through the county, which is typically a 4 to 6 week process. And then Utah Broadband will install the new array. They say it's about a week process, so we try to give ourselves a buffer there as far as making sure we can hit the timing. And fingers crossed, everything works out well.
And we're good with access moving forward? They're not questioning that?
Yeah, we got an updated easement agreement for access across that property. And,
Brad.
So thankfully, we were able to resolve that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you had a note about water rights for Pine Meadows. Any insights on their portfolio?
I have a fairly significant concern that I didn't think about initially.
Okay.
As Ian's probably aware, the Snyderville Basin has a moratorium on new, you know, essentially bringing water rights into the basin to divert. So I think we need to communicate with the Division of Water Rights, but there's a chance that their water rights won't be useful to Mountain Regional.
Oh, no.
So the concern there is for the customers of Pine Meadows, because that becomes a, two things. It's concerning for the district, because the district would have to support their needs using our own water right portfolio. It's concerning for them because there's going to be a charge for them, for us to do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? So, more due diligence is needed, but I just got that concern from our water right attorney.
Yikes. Are they aware of this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Talked to Eric Silic about that yesterday or the day before, and he's communicated with his, with the folks that he's working with on his end as well about it.
Okay. And then the leak protocol that was discussed, are you guys writing up like a new SOP, or you're updating another?
So we've talked for years about having a specific checklist that's run through when a leak occurs. We don't currently have one implemented.
Okay.
Customer leak or
mainline break, you know, that sort of thing. It's been district knowledge that's passed on through training and things like that, but it's easy to forget something in the heat of the moment. I mean, Tim, I know you went off and looked at that leak in Sun Peak over the winter. I mean, it can be extremely difficult circumstances, and you guys are just trying to focus on mitigating damage and things like that. So we're trying to, on one hand, understand and recognize that we don't want to give them a bunch of paper they have to push around. On the other hand, I'll use Everbridge as an example. If we're going to communicate with relevant customers on water service disruptions, we have the customer service team and the operations team have to communicate on what's going on. So we're trying to find the right balance there. We're talking about a laminated business card and being keeping your wallet kind of thing that just glance at and say, okay, did I do all of those five things?
So I'm fully supportive. Anywhere we can have written up documents, SOPs, scopes of work, I think for the reasons you just described, it helps us in the future. You know, turnover staff, consistency, all those things. So thank you for doing that. That's great. And then last question, Chris. Mike Bradley, what's his title?
Oh, it was the giant position you guys approved last month.
Energy, technology.
I didn't realize that's who that was. Okay, got it. All right, and he's reporting to you?
Yep.
Cool.
Yep, he's been in the thick of it for the last 2 weeks solid, so yep.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's it.
Tim?
I didn't have any questions.
Okay.
I like the pictures, though.
Yeah?
Right. Valves. Valves in one, and then other one like a 4,000 times magnification.
That's of the individual filter module straws, I call them, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Joel, any questions? Karen?
Not for me either.
Okay. I'll close. I just thought of, you know, the whole team has been doing awesome. Lisa's been heading up the conservation side, is doing a great job, and has been supporting her. What came to mind is the spring. The spring is Sam submitted our operating permit to the division today. We expect Sam's target is July 1st, but everything is everything installed? Integrated programming was being done today.
It's not done, but it's well on its way.
Yeah, the mixer's in. We're ready to flip the switch. Try to take advantage of the spring water when it's producing a fair bit. And that's been a huge lift for the folks on the technical and operations side. So, really good work.
Yeah.
Are you going to be taking any time off in the near future? It looks like we have to coordinate a personnel committee meeting.
We do. I am. I've got a few days off in July. My plan was to reach out to you and Joel the week of the 5th.
Okay.
To get together. Any other closing comments, questions?
None for me.
Hey, Scott, Steve, if you're still at the office, I can even, like, zip over there and sign that tonight if you want.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, because I can be there in 3 minutes.
All right, yeah, come on over.
Okay.
With that, we stand adjourned at
8:01.
8:01. Imagine that, 8 o'clock.
And we started a few minutes late, so I think we were under 2 hours.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Great job.